verses. Alas, how powerful are the hopes of a living being to continue his life. Verily, you are living just like a household dog and are eating the remnants of food given by Bhima. Please repeat, alas.
Alas.
How powerful are the hopes of a living being?
How powerful are the hopes of a living being?
To continue his life.
To continue his life.
Verily, you are living just like a household dog.
Verily, you are living just like a household dog.
And are eating remnants of food.
And eating remnants of food.
Given by Bhima.
Given by Bhima.
So Ramanandaji, if you'll be kind enough to read the purport.
Okay, I can do that. Just one second. Okay, so at this time, if everybody could please mute themselves, I'm going to mute everybody on free conferencing. Okay, here we go. Purport. A sadhu should never flatter kings or rich men to live comfortably at their cost. A sadhu is to speak to the householders about the naked truth of life so that they may come to their senses about the precarious life and material existence. Dhritarashtra is a typical example of an attached old man in householder life. He had become a pauper in the true sense, yet he wanted to live comfortably in the house of the Pandavas, of whom Bhima especially is mentioned, because personally he had killed two prominent sons of Dhritarashtra, namely Duryodhana and Dushasana. These two sons were very much dear to him for their notorious and nefarious activities, and Bhima is pointed out because he killed these two pet sons. Why was Dhritarashtra living there at the house of the Pandavas? Because he wanted to continue his life comfortably, even at the risk of all humiliation. Vidura, therefore, was astonished. How powerful is the urge to continue life? This sense of continuing one's life indicates that a living being is eternally a living entity and does not want to change his bodily habitation. The foolish man does not know that a particular term of bodily existence is awarded to him to undergo a term of imprisonment, and the human body is awarded after many, many births and deaths as a chance for self-realization to go back home, back to Godhead. But persons like Dhritarashtra try to make plans to live there in a comfortable position with profit and interest, for they do not see things as they are. Dhritarashtra is blind and continues to hope to live comfortably in the midst of all kinds of reverses of life. A sadhu like Vidura is meant to awaken such blind persons and thus help them go back to Godhead, where life is eternal. Once going there, no one wants to come back to this material world of miseries. We can just imagine how responsible a task is entrusted to a sadhu like Mahatma Vidura.
Thank you, Prabhuji. Om Jnana Timirandasya Gyananjana Salakaya Chakshur Unmilitam Jena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Vancha Kalpatarubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhi Evacha Patitanang Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha. Wow. So, we're reading about Dhritarashtra, and we understand that he is blind in two ways. He's blind in the literal sense, which is not that big of a deal. That caused him some problems in terms of him not being able to assume his rightful claim, which would have been to be the king. But because of his blindness, which I think we'll find out as we're reading here, one sense, this curse turned out to be a blessing. This reversal, and we'll see how Vidura is enlightening him. So this physical blindness is one thing, but what is critical is the figurative understanding of his blindness, and that is that he was spiritually blind. And now Vidura is trying to enlighten him. And just like we chant in the beginning, often before our classes, Om Ajnana Timirandasya Gyananjana Salakaya Chakshur Un Militam Jena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha. We are all born in the darkest of ignorance. We're all basically born blind. Everyone is born blind. Except, of course, in special cases, a self-realized soul or perhaps someone who was finishing up his business from previous life. But in general, the understanding, and it certainly I can speak for myself, there's no question about it, looking back at my past life, born absolutely 100% clinically blind. And Vidura, with the salakaya, salaka is a medical instrument which is used for putting ointment into the eyes. Gyananjana. Gyana is knowledge, and anjana means ointment. So he is attempting now, just like an expert surgeon, to put the ointment of knowledge, of enlightenment, into andasya. Andasya, anda we know means blind. Andasya means one who is blind. So he is attempting to put in this ointment and to wake him up from this darkness, this extreme black cloud of covering, which is called the false ego and pride. How proud he was to the last moment of his life. Everything is falling apart, but still he has hopes for enjoying within this world, and he's accepting such a degraded position. And now Vidura is very expertly waiting for like the perfect surgeon, the exact right time to enlighten him. And in his particular case, because he was so covered, the exact right time was in his old age, when he was now able to practically see that his body was falling apart. We read in yesterday's verse, his liver was failing, his memory was weak, his teeth were loose. So at this exact time, he was now coming when he is perceiving, and Krishna is directing him at the proper time to come to enlighten him. Krishna directing from within the heart, as we see in so many cases. I think we were speaking in a previous class about this, how Krishna would send Narada at the exact time for the exact person. So now, just like a boil, if you go to a doctor too early, you have a bad boil. It may not be ready to be lanced yet, even though the infection's there, the pus is there, it's all building up underneath of the skin. But it has to reach a certain point, and when the doctor knows that this is the exact moment, now it is time to go in and lance and cut, then that's when the doctor will perform the procedure. So he is trying to lance or cut at the false ego of Dhritarashtra. In yesterday's verse, he was primarily directing his words at his physical body. You know, he said, look at your physical body. Your body's deteriorating. You're becoming an old man, old and decrepit. And now today, it's more that he's attacking the false ego, where he's saying that you're living just like a household dog. And that false ego is so prominent. It is such a dark cloud that it takes a great pure devotee and great potency in order to penetrate or to purify that false ego. And it covers in so many different ways. I was like channel surfing, if you will, the Veda base the other day, and I came across a really wonderful verse in the 10th canto. I'm going to read that verse, which is describing how the false ego is like a dark cloud. And this is an incredibly profound verse. Demigods are speaking. During the rainy season, the moon was prevented from appearing directly by the covering of the clouds, which were themselves illuminated by the moon's rays. Similarly, the living being in material existence is prevented from appearing directly by the covering of the false ego, which is itself illuminated by the consciousness of the pure soul. So what this is describing is just like if we look up at a cloud, we can see the cloud. But the only reason we can see the cloud is because of the presence of the sun. The sun is illuminating the cloud. The cloud is not in and of itself luminous. It appears luminous. If you don't see the sun, someone with a poor fund of knowledge, someone, say, perhaps just, you know, came out of nowhere and looked up in the sky, he saw clouds and saw light was coming from them, he may think that this is actually the source of the light. But the fact is, the source of light is actually coming from the sun. So in the same way, the false ego, which appears itself to be illuminated, is actually illuminated by the soul itself. In other words, without the presence of the soul, the false ego is just material energy. It has no consciousness. It has no cognizance. No matter how obscure the purity and the brilliance of the soul, to some degree, that the quality of the soul can be perceived. Just like no matter how dark the cloud is, a cloud may be extremely dark, even on a sunny day, but even though it is so incredibly dark, still, to some degree, there is luminous coming coming through. So I guess that's not so much of a stretch to tie that in with the verse in the second canto, where Krishna is speaking, and Krishna says, "Vrte vratam yapratieta." By the way, pratieta means to perceive. Vrte vratam yapratieta na pratieta chatmani tad vidyad atmano mayam yatabha so yatatamaha. So yatabaso yatatamaha. That reflection which appears to be in darkness. In other words, it's darkness, and we're seeing reflection kind of out of nowhere, if you will. So in the same way, within the nowhere of the false ego, we're perceiving consciousness, which really has nothing to do with the false ego itself, but it's simply the false ego reflecting through it. And this false ego can be just incredibly, incredibly dark. But Vidura was able to see through this false ego. He wasn't just seeing the cloud of the false ego of Vidura, but because he was now a pure devotee, completely enlightened by Maitreya Rishi, he was able to see the pure soul within, seeing through the cloud and understanding that pure, pure devotee within, which is perfect and complete. And in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna describes that how variously by these different types of clouds or different types of covering, the consciousness of the living entity reflecting through acts in many different ways. I think we're all familiar with the verse where Krishna describes, how does that go? Where as fire is covered by smoke and as a mirror is covered by dust, and an embryo is covered by the womb, the living entity is covered by different degrees of lust. So this cloud of false ego, just like, for example, we look up at the clouds. I'm actually outside right now. I'm out in our backyard, and I'm looking up in the sky, and it's actually a really beautiful day. There's this beautiful blue sky, and I'm seeing all these different white cottony clouds up there. And haven't we all had the experience of looking at a cloud, and we look up at the cloud and said, oh my God, that looks like a pig. And then you watch it for a while, and you watch it for a while, and it starts to morph, and it starts to change. Wait a minute, now it kind of looks more like a turtle. And then you look at it again, and looks like a raccoon. And then you look at it again, and it looks like a fish. So in that same way, the cloud of the false ego, according to the obscurity of the cloud and the shape of the cloud, creates all different types of consciousness within different forms. Now, we know, for example, there are 8,400,000 different species, but that doesn't mean that we're limited to 8,400,000 different situations or manifestations of the false ego. Because take, for example, a pig. Let's say someone is within the body of a pig, but there's so many different varieties of being a pig. There's a happy pig, a sad pig, a fat pig, a shy pig, a bold pig. So even within the confines or within the category of each different species, there's really unlimited situations in which these clouds can form. Just like I gave the example of a cloud looking like a pig, but there could be a dark cloud looking like a pig. There could be a white cloud or a clear cloud looking through a pig. There could be a mix where it's a little dark in one part and white in another. So in this way, the false ego is covering. And if we think how amazing it is, the potency of that false ego, that the living entity accepts these different forms, from Brahma all the way down to to a pig, to a worm in stool, and that living entity so covered, but in its pure state, as Vidura's understanding, in any species of life, the full potential of the soul is there. I mean, how can you imagine like a worm, just a little worm or a slug wiggling along on the grass? It has an eternal rasa with Krishna. It's full of knowledge. It knows within its heart the purport of all the Vedas. So this is the vision that Vidura had. He was trying to cut through that false ego to get to the pure being whom Dhritarashtra actually was. So it's this false ego that manifests the our greatest enemies: kama, krodha, lobha, moha, madha, matsarya, lust, anger, greed, illusion, envy, madness. And these are what have to be conquered in order for one to advance in spiritual life. And we should all be very introspective and see how covered we are by our own false ego and understand the struggle that our whole purpose of life is to conquer or purify that false ego. I remember when, a year or so ago, it was last year, when Sureshwar Prabhu and I were at, what's that university? Can't remember. Anyway, we were at one of the universities and we were giving a class, and we were taking turns answering questions. He'd answer a question, I'd answer a question, he'd answer a question. So someone asked me the question. He said, it was a question which totally caught me off guard. He said to me, or she said, I don't remember. They said, what is the one thing that you struggle with the most in following the path that we are on? And I remember glancing at Sureshwar, and he glanced back at me. It's like, oh my God, what an unusual question. And I couldn't think how to answer that question But very quickly, Krishna kind of gave me what I thought was the right answer. And I thought about it, because sometimes we'll answer somebody's question and we'll think, geez, I wish I would have said this or I should have said that. But in this particular case, I remember the answer that I gave was that the biggest struggle that I'm having... Hi there.
Hi.
I'll be with you all in a bit. Just make yourselves at home. You're having your makeup done, yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah, Ruth will be right here. I'm sorry, one of my wedding couples is taking a little mini tour. How auspicious they walk back and they're hearing the Bhagavatam. So anyway, really, what do we struggle with the most? And at least I can certainly say for myself, my biggest struggle is the false ego, that it's always trying to attack and cover, and it's really the greatest enemy, as Krishna says so many times in the Bhagavad Gita. Boy. Deva, can you turn that off? I'm sorry. Okay. So anyway, Vidura was acting in so many ways to smash, and we can see in this particular verse, living like a household dog. He wanted to smash the pride of Dhritarashtra, who's hanging on at the very, he's old and falling apart, but yet he's still so proud. Just like, can everybody picture, I'm sure everyone has seen it, we're probably not news junkies, but I think everyone has seen the video or the photo of when Saddam Hussein, when they finally caught that rascal, and he was living like in some, like a little cellar, like down in a little hole, and they it was like a pit, and they lifted the cover up, and he came up, and he was filthy, and he was unshaven, he was dirty, and but yet he was still claiming, I am the king, I am the I am the king of Iraq, I am King Saddam Hussein. And anyway, they just dragged him off unceremoniously, and ultimately he was hung. Now, pride, in one sense, pride is not always a bad thing. Pride is normal. Pride is natural. Just like in Vrindavan, the residents of Vrindavan, they're very proud. They're proud of Krishna. They're proud of the wonderful things that Krishna does, Krishna's activities. They're proud of the other residents, of what they're performing. And just like we are, we're very proud of our spiritual master. We're proud of Prabhupada. We're proud of our great forefathers and our heritage. We're so proud of Bhakti Siddhanta, the lion-like guru who accepted no compromise and preached so boldly. We're proud of Haridas Thakur, who set such a perfect example. And Raghunath Das, who said, let everyone, was Vasudev, mixed up here. Was it Vasudev Datta? I believe it was Vasudev Datta, who said, let everybody go back to Godhead. Let me stay and suffer their consequences. Raghunath Das, the austerity and how renounced he was. Gorkhasur Das Babaji in the same way. We are so proud of them. And that's normal. But we're never, but what when we become proud of what we do, then that is simply the false ego. And that is a great cause of fall down. Just like Prabhupada, when he performed so many amazing things, such great accomplishments, but he always said it is simply due to the mercy of my spiritual master. And sometimes he would try to even give the credits to his disciples, but he would never take one iota of credit for himself. And in Gita, Krishna says, "Karmanya varikaraste ma paleshu kadachana ma karma palahetor mor mate sungo tvakarmani." And Krishna says, we have a right. Adhikar means we have a right. Kamanye varikaraste, We have a right to perform our duty, mapaleshu kadachana, but no right to the fruits. Mapaleshu kadachana, kadachana means at any time. Ma karma palahetor bor, and never think ourselves the doer. Mate sangotva karmani, but at the same time, even though we're not the doer, we don't get the fruits, etc., don't become attached. Mate sango, never become attached to karmani, akarmani. To doing nothing. So we have to understand the importance or the tenacity of the false ego, that even if one is able to give up all attachment to sense gratification, completely giving up attachment to sense gratification, that false ego may still remain. The demigods and Brahma, also in the 10th canto, they said, yenye rvindaksha vamukti maninas tavatya bhavada shuddha buddhaya aruya kuchchena param padang tatabhatantiyo nadada jushmarangraha, that even those, yenye rvindaksha, my dear lotus-eyed lord, vamukti maninas, there are those who, vimukta maninas, maninas within their mind, they are vimukta, they are only thinking that they are liberated. Even even those coming up to the level of giving up all attachment within this material world and are in the Brahman effulgence, parampadang, patadi tantiyo nadada jushmarangraha, because they have not taken full shelter at Krishna's lotus feet, once again, that false ego flares up again, and they go back again to try to enjoy within this material world. Now, we shouldn't always think, by the way, that a false ego is something that appears very ugly. Like if we think, for example, of Ravana or Hiranyakashipu, or these huge, huge false egos, which obviously was a great stumbling block in their spiritual life, of course. They got some special mercy at the end, but that's another story. But sometimes the false ego can also be not in the mode of ignorance, in the mode of passion, can also be in the mode of goodness. Just like King Bharat. King Bharat, he was the king of the world, a great, great king, and he performed so many wonderful sacrifices and was so loved by everyone. But yet, when it was his time, he divided up all of his wealth. He left his kingdom, and he went up to the Himalayas, to the Gandaki River, and simply wore deer skin, and he began his spiritual practices, and was collecting leaves and tulsi, and was worshiping the many. Actually, it's described in the Bhagavatam. The Gandaki River, by the way, anywhere this river flows becomes sanctified. It's so holy because all around the river are pebbles, but all the pebbles are shalagram. So he was very, very, very dutifully worshiping the shalagram and was becoming so advanced in his spiritual life to the point of actually experiencing bhava. It's described in the Bhagavatam that bodily symptoms were beginning to manifest. Tears were flowing from his eyes, so much so that he couldn't even see. It was described that his heart was like a lake, filled with the water of ecstatic love. The metaphor is so beautiful. His heart filled with the water of ecstatic love, and his mind would bathe in the lake of his heart within that love. But still, in spite of that, becoming so advanced, so unattached, we know that when the doe was drinking a little water on the bank of the Gandaki, and the lion came, and out of great fear, the doe jumped into the water and swam across and aborted a midstream. And when she finally crossed, she was so tired and so distraught due to the miscarriage that she went into a cave and died. But King Bharat then took pity on this little deer And he started taking care of it. And it just got way out of hand. And we see that the false ego came in. He was thinking that I am saving the deer, and I am feeding the deer, and I am the deer's friend, and I am the deer's mother, and I am the deer's father, and the deer loves me, and I love the deer. And he was so absorbed in taking care of the deer, so much so that in his next lifetime, he came back as a deer. And, of course, he had the benediction that in that form of a deer, he could still remember and knew what he did wrong. So then in his next life, he wanted to make absolutely sure that he never, ever let this false ego get in the way again. So when he was born as Judd Barrett, he was a pure devotee. He was completely self-realized. But yet he acted in such a way like an avaduta. He acted such that everyone would disrespect him. When he was, his father was a very dutiful brahmana, and he tried to teach him shastra, and he tried to teach him in so many ways the principles of brahminical life, but he would never follow. When he was taught to pass stool and then wash before he eats, immediately after passing stool, he would do the opposite. He would take bath, then pass stool, and then, you know, where is the prasadam? So he acted his whole life like that. Until Krishna had directed him in the presence of King Rahugana to enlighten the king. So at this point, he stepped out of that position and he went now to save the king. Now, we could sort of question the difference. Well, what is the difference? In one, he was saving a deer. Here, he's saving the king. But there's a huge difference. In saving the deer, it was simply out of compassion for the body. And for King Rahugana, it was simply to save the soul, to enlighten the soul. It had nothing to do with the physical body. It had nothing to do with false ego. And then after he enlightened the king, who was the king of the world, rather than enjoy, oh, my God, I mean, look what he's done. How easy it for us if we help someone in their spiritual life, we want to take credit for it. Absolutely no credit at all. As soon as he enlightened King Rahugana, then rather than wanting to try to enjoy that kingdom, he simply retired back into the forest and once again resumed his avatuta-like life. So we have to understand, we can't just simply smash our false ego. It's not smashable. The false ego ultimately has to become purified. So in this particular case of Dhritarashtra, it was getting the blessing of the Vaishnava, of Vidura, who was coming to give his full blessings in order to purify the words that he's speaking. As powerful as they are, these words, this sound vibration, was meant to purify that false ego. It's not something he could have ever done on his own. And our position is simply the same. We can't in and of ourselves smash our false ego, but our false ego can simply be purified. And as we know in this age, as Balabhabhata says in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Kali Kalar Dharma Krishna Nama Sankirtan. In this age of Kali, the means of purification is taking shelter of the holy name of Krishna. And it's nice for us now because today is the disappearance day of Sri Gadadhar. And we should try to, on this very auspicious day, appreciate the mercy that Gadadhar has to offer and to give us. Because Krishna came in this age, Krishna Varnam Tasha Krishnam, Sango Pankastra Parshadam, Jugyai Sankirtana Prayarya Janta Hisumedasha. So in this verse, Parshadam means confidential devotees. So Lord Chaitanya Krishna came in this beautiful golden form, chanting the holy name along with his associates, and his servants and his weapons, various weapons, which is described as his beauty, and of course the holy name. And Parshadam is very, very confidential devotees. And we often chant the beautiful verse, Panchatattvatmakam Krishnam Bhaktarupa Svarupakam Bhaktavataram Bhaktakyam Namami Bhaktashaktikam. So this is describing the Panchatattva, how they have come. Bhaktarupa, that's Lord Chaitanya. Bhaktarupa is the form, coming in the form of a devotee. And Svarupakam means own form, manifesting in his own form. In other words, that's Nityananda, the expansion of his own form. Bhaktavataram, which would be Advaita Acharya, the avatar in form of Bhakta. And Srivasacharya. And then Bhaktashaktikam, that is Gadadhar Pandit. And Shaktikam means Shaktikam, one who is giving, who gives energy or inspiration to the devotees, Bhaktashaktikam. And on this auspicious day, it's just so wonderful to appreciate that what Gadadhar has come to give. When we cannot approach Krishna except through Radha. And as we chant the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, we're chanting Hare Krishna. This is Gadadhar coming in an incredibly merciful form. The whole Panchatattva have come to distribute the plunder from the storehouse of love of God to just give away freely. So especially chanting the Maha Mantra, which Lord Chaitanya and the Panchatattva have come to give, it is Gadadhar Pandit through whom we are begging the mercy to chant the holy name, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. This is Radha, this is Gadadhar. So Gadadhar, I'm not such an expert in the Chaitanya Lila. I'm not an expert in anything, but little that I can say in this regard was that Gadadhar Pandit appeared a year or so after Lord Chaitanya appeared. And it's described that in their childhood, that the two of them were extremely attached and totally inseparable from their very, very childhood. And they used to go together to Ganganagar, where they would both study together. They went to school together. They would walk home together. They would bathe together. And actually, it's described in Chaitanya Charitamrita that they couldn't be separated even for a moment. And then later in the Leela, when Lord Chaitanya took sannyas and went to Jagannath Puri, of course, Gadadhar Pandit followed him everywhere. And then in Puri, the devotees would all come to visit Lord Chaitanya once a year, and they would stay during the rainy season for the Rath Yatra for about 4 months. They would all come and go, but not Gadadhar. Gadadhar could not bear the association of Mahaprabhu. Therefore, Mahaprabhu, you know, permitted him to stay. And they engaged in the most wonderful, loving pastimes, which we can read all about in the Chaitanya Bhagavat and in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. One point that sticks in my mind was that Lord Chaitanya particularly relished when Gadadhar Pandit would read Srimad Bhagavatam. He just loved hearing Gadadhar reading Bhagavatam. And at one point, Gadadhar Pandit, he took Chaitra Sannyas. And Chaitra Sannyas was a special vow in the sannyas order where one would stay within the land. And that land was Jagannath Puri. He would not leave Jagannath Puri. And he would stay there and engage himself for in the worship primarily of the Todi Gopinath deities. When Lord Chaitanya left one time to go to Vrindavan, Gadadhar Pandit couldn't bear this. He just couldn't bear the separation. Now, he made the vow never to leave, but he was determined to break his vow, and he said he doesn't care. He cannot bear the separation of Mahaprabhu, so he followed Mahaprabhu. But Mahaprabhu turned him back, and this is described as such a such a transcendental, tragic and sad lila, where because Lord Chaitanya couldn't bear the separation of Gadadhar either, but still he ordered that he go back so he would not break the vow of Chaitra Sannyas, and ultimately he did go back. But there's a lot we need to understand in this regard, because this is really kind of inconceivable. Normally when Krishna's associates from the spiritual world come into the material world, they play a similar role. Just like, for example, when Balaram came as Nichanda, so they were still, like brotherly buddies, or Arjuna, when Arjuna came as Hanuman, he was still the servant of Krishna, servant and friend, just like Arjuna, or Mother Jasoda, which she would come as Mother Sachi and so on. And so in many cases, we see the role is very, very similar. But in this particular case, there's a real problem, because Lord Chaitanya had come to taste what Radharani is tasting. So if Gadadhar understood that this was Krishna's time to experience what Radha is experiencing, so Gadadhar conducted himself as a perfect brahmana. He's very submissive, very scholarly, and very, very sober. And he would intentionally not act to attract Lord Chaitanya to him, particularly after the childhood years, to attract him to him, but rather sort of encourage him along so that he could taste the very, very intimate nectar or the pleasure that the devotee is experiencing. Gopika darshani Krishna raye ananda hoy tata hoy tikoti guni guna gopi ashvadoy. So it's explained that the pleasure that the gopis are speaking, to speak of Radharani, is millions times greater than that which Krishna is experiencing. So Gadadhar understood that this was now Krishna's turn, and therefore intentionally he would not try to enact, and this is really inconceivable what I'm speaking about, but he would not try to act in the mood in any way of Radha, or act in the mood of Shakti Tattva, but he was acting completely differently. And this is a very, very esoteric point. So we can today, on the disappearance of Gadadhar Pandit, pray for his mercy to help us to be able to taste the nectar of Krishna's holy name, to be able to distribute that nectar of Krishna's holy name, and in this way purify that false ego, just as Vidura was smashing the false ego of Dhritarashtra. We can also pray especially to Radharani in that mood, or to Gadadhar in that special mood on his disappearance day, to give us his full blessings and let us take complete shelter of Krishna's holy name, because it is that holy name that it's going to purify our hearts and ultimately purify our false egos. So we're just about out of time, and I think I'll end here. Okay. I'm sorry I went a little beyond.
I've unmuted everybody already on pre-conferencing. I was just going to say, Nari, I really liked your class. It was very focused, wonderful examples that, you know, you really felt like they were living examples. I really like the example that wherever you pulled it out from about false ego, you know, just like the clouds, they're being illuminated by the sun, but still they're covering the vision. It's a wonderful example. Very deep.
Thank you, Prabhuji. Any other?
Hare Krishna, Prabhu, please accept my obeisances.
Jai Maharaji, accept my obeisances.
Jai. Guru Prabhupada. I wanted also to, I really liked about that you focus on false ego, and it just a little maybe comment, but it reminded me, Ravindra Swarup gave a whole class on false ego, and he really pointed, two points he made, nice points, that false ego has very nasty feature that usually, you know, it's not visible to us. We're thinking about ourselves, let's say, very, you know, very positive and nice, and everybody else sees it, you know, different things in us. So that feature that we actually completely invisible to us, it's very tricky. And another example he gave that it's like a clunky vehicle, he said, it's an absolutely unnecessary big thing that we're dragging around. And that it's so wonderful when you actually get rid of it. So anyway, it's nice to hear you saying that we have to purify it. Is it any another ways we can get rid of it? Is it by mercy or it just by our endeavor or for both?
Well, or both. It's ultimately, it's never our endeavor, like Bhakti Siddhanta says, don't try to see Krishna. Act in such a way that Krishna wants to see you. If we very earnestly chant our 16 rounds and we're hearing every day, we do that to please the guru, to please Prabhupada, to please the whole Parampara, to please Lord Chaitanya, and then by them being pleased, then we get the mercy. So yes, it is by our endeavor that we get the mercy, but it's not our endeavor that purifies us. You follow me?
Right.
We act in such a way that they're pleased with us, and then we become purified. So there's nothing we can do other than beg for mercy and act and do exactly what we're told. And then if we do what we're told, then the mercy comes. And it's important to understand regarding the false ego that the false ego is actually, when the whole, it is really the beginning and the end of material life. The beginning and the end of material life. Because when in the spiritual world, which is, you know, fully, you know, luminous, and this is basyate soyo nishashankana pavaka, it is complete, you know, dazzling light and effulgent knowledge everywhere. But within, when Krishna desires to create the material world, it's described that within that Brahma Jyoti, within that brilliance, he creates a cloud. And that cloud is the Mahatattva. And the very first thing created from the Mahatattva is the false ego. And then from that false ego, everything else is created. All the elements, earth, water, fire, air, ether, everything comes from false ego. And then at the same time, at the you know, I read this. Let me find this. Hold on. At the time of devastation, the exact opposite happens. Hang on. Here it is. Okay. I read this recently. Oh, listen to this. The Mahatattva arises from this Maya. And from the Mahatattva comes the three varieties of false ego. So the Mahatattva then expands into three varieties of false ego, which are described earlier. I'm not going to read all that, but it's described earlier as in the mode of goodness, passion, and ignorance. So at the time of annihilation, the five great elements, namely earth, water, fire, air, and ether, merge into the false ego in the mode of ignorance from which they were originally generated. The 10 senses, the intelligence, merge into the false ego in the mode of passion. And the mind, along with the demigods, merge into false ego in the mode of goodness, which then merges back into the Mahatattva, which further take shelter of the unmanifested pradhan. So that's the last thing. It's the first and the last thing is that false ego.
Right.
So this false ego is in this pride. That's what Lord Chaitanya instructs us. Trinada pisa nichena, torora pisa hishnana, amanina, manidina, kirtaniya sadahari. If we really want to take shelter, Krishna, and chant purely, pride has got to be given up. We've got to be ready to consider ourselves, you know, lower than a blade of grass, like the stroll in the street.
Right.
And ready to that stuff, you know. Whatever is put upon us. And as I was giving an example of Jada Bharat, he forced himself into a situation like that so that he wouldn't get respect from anyone, because he knew more than anyone the danger of that false ego, which stayed with him right up to the point of bhava. Now, we can't imitate Jada Bharat and King Bharat. And similarly, nor is our situation the same as his. We're living in Kali Yuga. We're very, very fallen. But we can at least take full shelter of Krishna's holy name, and especially today, take shelter of Gadadhar Pandit, and really, especially today, pray for his mercy that we're able to truly embrace the process by which we can purify ourselves in chanting very, very purely from our hearts Krishna's holy name. So we should probably end here. I want to thank you all very much, as always, for your association, and especially thank Ramananda Prabhu. I just feel so indebted to him for these wonderful classes, and have everyone's association. Jai. Glory to Prabhupada. Hari Bol.
Jai. Glory to Prabhupada.
Thank you, Prabhu.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.